ever wonder what therapists talk about over coffee? Well, we're three clinical psychologists, Dr. Diana Hill, Dr. Ray Littlewood, and Dr. Debbie Sorensen, and we'd like to welcome you to Psychologists Off the Clock. In this podcast, you'll get a glimpse into the books we read, the research we think is interesting, and the ideas from psychology that we use to thrive in our own lives. Our webpage is www.offtheclockpsych.com, and there you can find resources we mention in this episode, as well as other podcasts we've posted. You can also find us on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter. Thanks for listening. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Ray Littlewood, and I'm joined today by my friend and colleague, Liza Mermelstein. She is a clinical psychologist, and we both practice together at Behavior Therapy Associates in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We recently did a talk for the local psychologist about reproductive mental health, and I'm really excited to get together with you, Liza, today to talk a little bit about some of the things that we researched and some of the, you know, kind of clinical experiences that we've had with reproductive mental health and share that with our audience. So welcome.
Thanks, Ray. It's really great to be here. I'm a big fan of the podcast, and I'm excited to be here talking more about this with you today.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here too. You look well rested. Liza and I both have small children, and we also have, a fairly large and thriving private practice focusing a lot on women's issues. So we get together occasionally and talk about kind of our future hopes and dreams on developing more programming for women, specifically on issues related to reproductive mental health. So what that means basically is that we are interested in the ways in which hormones and mood and big changes in life, like, you know, adolescence and puberty and, dealing with like the regular cycle of menstrual cycle and hormones, pregnancy, and then, you know, into perimenopause and menopause. I see a lot of clients at all of those phases. How about you?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that really attracted me to this topic is that it's really an area of intersection between sort of psychosocial factors and the biology. You know, when you think about what's going on for a woman who's about to become a mother, there's a tremendous amount of change when you think about what that means psychologically, what that means for her socially, what that means for her identity, and then also what's going on in her body and the, you know, amount of hormones kind of coursing through and changing as she goes through pregnancy and postpartum. And so I think that this is a really important and really interesting kind of topic for us to talk about.
Yeah. For sure. I think, many of the women that I see kind of present for therapy oftentimes for more general life stress issues. You know, it's like kind of transitions in life, right? Like a high school student going into college or college student graduating and finding a job or, you know, going from career to pregnancy and being a mom and then parenting
and then kids leaving the house or changing your career or retiring. You know, there's so many changes that women go through and so many different hats that they're wearing throughout their lifespan. And then you put on the overlay of hormonal changes. And I think that's where sort of having a knowledge about this can be really helpful.
Absolutely. I think that the biology of it is something that really, you know, in preparing for this presentation that we did, both of us really benefited from doing the research on, and that's one of the things that we're going to focus on today. We're also going to talk about how to differentiate between kind of the typical presentation of mood and when mood becomes more intensified or problematic as a result of hormones. So, for example, in the DSM-5, there's now a diagnosis called premenstrual dysphoric disorder. So we'll be talking about how to differentiate between that and PMS and just typical depression. And then also looking at those phases, like you mentioned, Liza, like in pregnancy, right? Like what's postpartum depression? How do you differentiate that from, you know, the typical baby blues? And then we'll be talking about the treatment and sort of what the steps are to identifying, you know, getting a good diagnosis and then guiding somebody who's, you know, maybe navigating multiple things, right? It's not just I'm here because I have PMS. It's you know, I'm trying to balance all of these life stressors.
Yeah, I think one thing that we do know from sort of, you know, a great deal of research is that, you know, women tend to have higher rates of many mental health disorders. And in particular, you know, women are 50% more likely than men to experience a mood disorder over their lifetime. Similarly, they're 60% more likely to experience an anxiety disorder over their lifespan. And so, you know, we know that women are at particular risk for mood disorders. And there's a lot of reasons why. And today, we're just going to tackle sort of one small slice of that. You know, there certainly are other factors, right? Women have to deal with kind of higher rates of victimization. Women often are dealing with, you know, higher rates of poverty.
Yeah.
Everything from mansplaining and catcalling.
Yeah, just the inequalities, right, or challenges that lots of women face.
Right. So certainly hormones aren't the whole picture. And I don't think that that's the message we want to give at all. But I think that for me, sort of, it's helpful to understand kind of what's going on hormonally, because this can sort of help understand just one factor that might be impacting sort of changes that one might experience. And I think being educated about that can be really helpful, because then it sort of normalizes a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes even can kind of help prevent sort of escalation into more significant sort of mood issues if you are able to kind of figure out what's going on and intervene pretty early.
The first thing maybe that we can talk about is sort of what the primary sort of drivers are biologically. In our research, I learned a lot about the role of estrogen. That's the sort of dominant hormone in a woman's reproductive years. Estrogen is very, very low prior to menstruation. And then there's like this buildup of estrogen, which basically leads to the onset of menses. And then throughout the reproductive years, which can be from anywhere to, you know, age 10 to 12, all the way until, you know, for some women, like mid-50s. And during that time, estrogen really cycles on a monthly basis. And so it's important to understand sort of the change of hormones over the course of a typical cycle, but then also to look at the bigger picture, which is that there are phases during a woman's life where there's even greater fluctuation in estrogen. There's this really great video that we'll link to in the show notes about, it's a 2-minute overview of the menstrual cycle, and it's a really great video we found on YouTube that essentially shows that hormone changes and mood changes throughout the cycle. So for a woman, day one of the menstrual cycle is the first day that you bleed. And day one and two are marked by really low estrogen. So if you can think about while you're on your period, your energy tends to be very low. You might have cramps, might be more tired. It's a really good time to kind of take it easy, exercise gently, and then as your period ends, you can notice that your energy starts to rise, and that's because estrogen is also starting to rise. Estrogen is really thought of as a mood elevator, and the way that estrogen elevates mood is estrogen tells monoamine oxidase, which is an enzyme that breaks down neurotransmitters such as serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine. So when estrogen levels are high, more of these sort of mood-elevating chemicals are available. And then, so if you can think about the later in the cycle, when estrogen starts to increase, your mood starts to increase and peaks around your mid-cycle. And that's during your fertile phase. So days 10 to 13 is when estrogen is at its highest. And kind of ironically, Liza, that's, you know, the fertile phase is when you're feeling your best, which kind of makes sense from a procreation sort of perspective, right? And then after that fertile period, once you ovulate, which is triggered by the spike in luteinizing hormone, which is another hormone involved in the cycle, that sort of also triggers a gradual decline in estrogen. So at the latter half of the cycle, estrogen starts to decline. And that's when you start to see like the changes and intensification of emotions and kind of more fatigue and tiredness. And then as you get later into the cycle, around days 19 to 22, estrogen really drops off, testosterone and progesterone increase, and you start to get the premenstrual symptoms like bloating, tiredness, decreased libido. And during that time, it's a good idea to be eating healthy and staying hydrated. And even doing exercise during that time can alleviate some of the kind of moodiness symptoms, but also the physical symptoms like the aches and bloating and soreness. So that's kind of the nutshell of hormone changes during the cycle.
Lifespan, we know that there's sort of higher rates of depression from sort of onset of menses to kind of menopause. Then throughout the lifespan, every month you're having these sort of fluctuations of hormones. And then there are these other critical periods, primarily during pregnancy and postpartum, and then during perimenopause when there are significant changes in estrogen. And it rather than just sort of the kind of decrease in estrogen as being related to sort of mood-related changes, it seems to be these sort of periods of fluctuation mm-hmm. that sort of when estrogen is fluctuating, we're at particular risk for sort of mood symptoms. And it seems like there's also sort of certain women who tend to be sort of sensitive to these changes. Mm-hmm. And so you might, and I think that both Ray and I can kind of attest to this, but that you'll see a lot of people who, you know, they're kind of experiencing mood changes, pretty impairing mood changes sort of throughout their monthly cycle. And that then they tend to be at higher risk for experiencing sort of prenatal or postpartum depression, and that they're also at higher risk for experiencing depression in perimenopause. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of the first things that I do often is, you know, when I'm working with a patient, I'll sort of have them kind of track some of their symptoms, and that gets us into this discussion of what is the difference between PMS, which is experienced by kind of a really high rate of women,
upwards of 80-90%. Yeah.
So most people are experiencing some sort of PMS symptoms. When does that get into what we call premenstrual dysphoric disorder?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, like you were saying, we haven't yet figured out how to measure hormonal sensitivity, but there certainly seems to be a subset of people who are more sensitive to the hormone changes and may be more vulnerable to developing a diagnosis like PMDD or postpartum depression, like you said. But the converse is also true, that if you experience major depression, you're also more likely to experience more severe premenstrual symptoms, postpartum depression, and more significant depression symptoms during perimenopause. Maybe we talk a little bit about the specifics of how we diagnose PMDD. That's something that at least I found many of my clients don't even know that's a thing. And it's helpful often, like Liza said, to spend some time tracking and to also do some psychoeducation about what the difference is between depression, PMS, and PMDD.
Mm-hmm. So temporarily, this is going to be different than something like major depression, where there's going to be sort of symptoms that are present in the final week before the onset of menses, the symptoms then start to improve within a few days after the onset of menses and become minimal or absent in the week post-menses. So that's different from sort of major depression, where you might have a waxing and waning of symptoms, but it's not going to be so consistently linked to the menstrual cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are a lot of overlapping symptoms. So if you're familiar at all with the symptoms of depression, you know, some of them are fairly straightforward, you know, depressed mood, loss of interest in activities you used to enjoy, you know, changes in appetite, difficulty concentrating, feeling lethargic, some sleep difficulties. But then there are some distinct differences between PMDD and major depression disorder.
Yeah, I think what the ones that stand out the most to me are a sense of being overwhelmed or out of control. You know, people report sort of feeling really anxious, perhaps, or really kind of like affectively like unstable, you know, that one minute you kind of are okay and the next minute you're like kind of screaming at your children to, you know, to do whatever, you know, whatever it was that was happening, just all of a sudden became really frustrating. There's, of course, the physical symptoms that go with the hormonal changes that are happening, such as breast tenderness or joint or muscle pain, and then the wonderful sensation of bloating and weight, you know, feeling like you're heavier than you are at other times of the month. And that irritability that tends to play out interpersonally. And I think that that's a real difference from depression, from typical depression presentation.
Mm-hmm. And it can feel a little bit more kind of anxious or keyed up, a little more irritable or edgy versus kind of typically a depressive disorder. You're going to be feeling down most
mm-hmm.
of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And PMS is primarily focused on a less intense version of the affective kind of ups and downs that you see in PMDD, right? So if you can kind of think about it on a spectrum, right? Like PMS comes with definitely some emotional ups and downs, but PMDD is like, you know, times five or times 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so as we were talking about before, you know, I think that some of this is just kind of going over with patients, you know, what their symptoms are, when they occur, and trying to kind of map this on to see if this is something that a disorder that kind of fits for them. And I was saying, you know, I'll often have individuals sort of do some mood tracking sort of throughout a couple of cycles, because this gives us a lot of information for treatment and also helps them to start to become more aware and potentially feel like they have some, not necessarily control, but manage those mood symptoms so that, you know, at certain points in the month, you might have to take things a little bit easier, knowing that you shouldn't kind of keep your cup runneth over mm-hmm. at those points. Whereas other times, you know, you might know that you're probably going to feel pretty good, and that's the time to kind of take on extra things or challenge yourself.
Yeah. And there's so many apps out there now that are set up to do exactly this, right? It's, they're tracking period tracker is a great one. It tracks, you know, your cycle just in terms of like the cycle length, which can be really helpful if you're trying to get pregnant or try not to get pregnant. and then in addition to that, it has you know, little tabs that you can use to track your symptoms. And
And there's some interesting research out there about the role of sort of stress risk for PMDD. And so like a lot of things in psychology, it's really difficult to parse apart. So for example, they've done studies that show that individuals who meet criteria for PMDD also report greater stressors over the last year. And so it's difficult to then know if, okay, does experiencing more stress put you at risk for developing PMDD, or does the mood-related symptoms make you more, make your threshold for perceiving stress and the impact it has on you lower and make you less resilient to managing stress? So it's really kind of one of those chicken and the egg sort of things.
Yeah, which is a really helpful sort of reframe for some patients who are coming in thinking or worrying that they're depressed, versus being able to look at it as there's times in the month where I really struggle and I need to figure out a better self-care plan for handling or changing stressors during that time so that I'm not so, you know, my functioning and my satisfaction with my life, it doesn't decline so much. And so really focusing on things like sleep and exercise and taking time for yourself to do, you know, nurturing things during the times of the month where you know that you're going to be a bit more sensitive, that your energy is going to be a bit lower, kind of like a more doable thing for patients, mm-hmm. right? It's like easier to think about it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's a little contradictory, but even though we know that hormones are playing a large role in kind of this disorder, hormonal treatment or birth control for some people can be helpful, and for other people really can exacerbate symptoms. So it's really, and there's so far research hasn't really found much rhyme or reason to it. So often it's something that, you know, women will try, and for some it will work, and for some it really will make things worse.
Yeah, I mean, so that's one of the questions that we, you know, that we're trying to sort of grapple with, you know, where, like, what are the sort of decision points for the next steps, right? After you identify that, hey, I think I do have severe PMS or PMDD, perhaps, what do I do next? Definitely going to consult with a gynecologist can be helpful for the reasons that Liza just said. You know, if you've been on a birth control in the past, can have maybe, you know, you might have some information about whether that might be helpful for you. If you've never been on birth control, it's something worth trying. And a gynecologist can also help if you're having like irregular cycles, or, you know, diagnose if there's other things that are going on, like polycystic ovarian syndrome is one of the things, or endometriosis. Both of those can cause a lot, like more severe premenstrual symptoms, and then also interfere with fertility. But then there's Seraphim, which is Prozac rebranded for PMDD, which has really been shown to be very effective for PMDD and also for depression that's with an onset in perimenopause.
Yeah, so I think it was a couple of years ago now, but that has sort of led to increased recognition of PMDD, but it still is underdiagnosed and underprescribed.
Yeah, I think a lot of women think it's, you know, it's a kind of a big deal to take an antidepressant. But one of the interesting things about using an antidepressant for like a hormonally related mood problem is that it can be used episodically, so basic or cyclically, I guess, that it can be used sort of during the latter half of the menstrual cycle when your mood symptoms are the worst, and that's actually been shown to be pretty beneficial, or just as beneficial as taking it continuously.
Yeah, so those are kind of questions that we'll encourage patients to have with their prescriber, whether that's their gynecologist or primary care physician or psychiatrist, about, you know, how to try taking their medications and what's going to be sort of most helpful for them.
And I wanted to also mention briefly that when we talked earlier about the change in estrogen and that the fluctuations in estrogen are really kind of crucial in the mood changes, is that during perimenopause, that is the period during a woman's reproductive years where there's the greatest fluctuations in estrogen. So during perimenopause, which is the 12-month period during which you're having irregular periods, And so you reach menopause once you have not had your period for 1 year. And at that point, basically, estrogen drops to the level that it did before you started your period when you were little.
Yeah, and it's interesting that during perimenopause, the rates of depression are found to be up to 14 times greater than the rates in premenopausal years.
Definitely a high-risk period. Yeah, it's a high-risk period. And if you think about, right, we were talking a lot about the life changes that tend to be happening around the time of perimenopause. Perimenopause, an early onset of perimenopause is in your 40s, and kind of the typical onset is usually early 50s. That's the time for many women that children are leaving home. Sometimes, you know, that's the time of relationship disruptions like divorce.
You might be caring for elderly parents and sort of dealing with, you know, you're sort of at a prime place in your career, juggling a lot of balls at that point for many women.
Yeah. So it's really common, I think, for, you know, that kind of like that change, that shift in like what I used to be able to handle. But now I feel like, you know, my threshold for irritation is much lower. My patience is much lower. I just, you know, I just feel like everything is bothering me and I just want everyone to go away. And for some women, that's their sort of first time in their life where they're experiencing those kinds of symptoms. And so it can be really concerning and unfamiliar and kind of surprising and not know what to do about it, right? Like, does this mean that I need to be on an antidepressant or do I need to get a divorce or what do I need to do?
Right. Yeah, and I think that, you know, I'm not sure how much we'll get into this during this podcast, but, you know, there's some really interesting information out there just of how culturally bound so much of this is that, you know, in our culture, which tends to sort of, you know, worship youth and beauty and, you know, it can be really, really challenging in a lot of ways to be sort of entering this period of, you know, when you're not menstruating anymore, when you don't have the option to have children anymore if you wanted. And that's not the case in lots of other cultures. You know, in many cultures, sort of this transition actually comes with sort of more freedoms or being less bound by some of the traditional viewpoints.
Yeah. And I think that transition, it does matter a lot in how you're looking at your own aging process and being able to, you know, like find a group of women who sort of support healthy aging and kind of focusing on like the benefits of being able to have more freedom, like you said, to be sort of looking at each other as sort of wise women who've had, you know, amazing lives and continue to do amazing things. So in today's podcast, you know, Liza, I really appreciate you coming in to talk with me. And I think, you know, we didn't get to some of the, what I think are really important topics around pre and postnatal depression, postpartum depression, talking about the impact of hormones during that phase, and then also the role of hormones and stress around trying to conceive and infertility treatment. So I'm kind of thinking that maybe a part two would be kind of a fun thing to do. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that sounds great.
Yeah, so we talked a lot today about the role of estrogen, really, right? And we know that estrogen, I don't know, by the way, we didn't mention this, that men have practically no estrogen. So when you look at the sort of chart of women versus men and sort of hormonal changes over the course of the month, men have a flat line and women have all these ups and downs and crazy lines, which, you know, just really emphasizes how interesting and multifaceted we can be and how, you know, how important it is to pay attention to your emotions, right? Because we have so many factors kind of driving it, and taking care of yourself emotionally is really, really important. And, you know, for myself and Liza, I think we draw from our own personal experiences and, And we really appreciate having the opportunity to work with women in all phases of life. It's really a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I find it so inspiring to see how many women are doing so many different things. And I just feel like I'm constantly learning from my patients. It's just such an honor to be able to sort of see the strength that a lot of people bring to really challenging times in their life.
Yeah. So with that, I think we're going to sum it up and be back with part two of Hormones and Mood in a future episode. So thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Ray, for having me here. I look forward to coming back.
Thanks, Liza. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Psychologists Off the Clock. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and iTunes. You can also find us at www.offtheclockpsych.com. That's off the clock, P-S-Y-C-H.com. Music by John Gu and Susie Stevens.